Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from thehammerspeaks.com, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just two Daves talking all the Steelers football you could ever want. And now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 2, Episode 97. Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the most comprehensive Steelers site on the internet, and I'm David Todd from TheHammerSpeaks.com. Dave, first and foremost, we've got a great interview with Dave Tate Thomas today of NFL and NFL.com. Does a lot of great work on the draft. We've had him on before. I know we're both looking forward to that.
Absolutely. He does a lot of work for scout.com as well, too. Many people are familiar with that site. He let me know in an email, David, that we better have our seatbelts buckled tight today. So, he's a real colorful guy, as I mentioned before, very knowledgeable, has been scouting for years and years. So we look to, be talking about future Steelers players that they might have their eye on in this upcoming draft. So we'll save that for the last part of the show, about 30 minutes or so I think we're going to have with him. And I, for one, am excited to talk to him once again.
Yeah, what did he tell us? He told us to buckle our seatbelts for this one?
Yeah, most definitely. He's real energetic, as people will see. He jumps around quite a bit as well, too, which is good. If people have been a long-time listener of this show and remember him on last year, he's a good person to talk to.
Yeah, we're both looking forward to that. So, Dave, I'd also be remiss if I didn't wish you a belated happy birthday yesterday, 44. Cake and dancing, girls?
The cake and everything except the dancing girls turned turned 308 in dog years, and I would like to let everybody know I do not look a day over 300 dog years.
I love that. I love it. All right, well, let's get right to it because we're going to save our time for Dave Tate Thomas. It doesn't mean there's not a lot to talk about. As always, the Steelers seem to be in the news, and they made the news again yesterday. Since we last spoke on Friday, another signing. Yesterday, Charlie Batch. I know you and I have talked about this. The likelihood of bringing back both Leftwich and Batch was pretty high in our opinion. Dennis Dixon was really never in the conversation, and it's now clear that the teams that are focused on him are the Ravens, the Rams, and the Broncos. But Charlie comes back on a one-year deal, just as you expected, and we talked about the numbers, the veteran minimum, or essentially what that is, and we can go through that. But the only thing I'll say, Dave, is it doesn't surprise me they signed Batch. It surprises me just a little bit they signed Batch before they signed Leftwich.
I'm going to say that, Leftwich still has some time to explore some other options out there, which may or may not be with the Indianapolis Colts. Who knows? Leftwich might still be thinking he might have a shot to start somewhere else around the league with these rookie quarterbacks possibly coming in. So I'm not going to rule out. I think several people are trying to rule out just because Batch was signed first that Leftwich will not be back. I'm not willing to do that yet. The Batch contract was for the the details have not been released, but it's probably going to be a veteran qualifying contract with a base salary of $925,000. The signing bonus we will wait to hear, but I expect that to be no more than $65,000 at most, so it can qualify for one of those qualifying contracts. That comes with a reduced salary cap hit that'll be in the neighborhood of $540,000 to $605,000. I expect if Leftwich is brought back, it'll be the same type contract as Charlie Batch got. I can't see it being much more than that. I don't see it being a multi-year deal as well. They also might be looking to wait and see what happens in the draft. Many people will know, if they follow the work on Steelers Depot, that the Steelers did, or Mike Tomlin did have a dinner date with Kirk Cousins when he was out at the Michigan State Pro Day. Don't know how much we can read into that. Don't know if we can expect the Steelers to draft another quarterback or not. So they might be waiting to get past draft day on that, but I'm not willing to rule out Leftwich is not returning just yet.
Yeah, I don't think anybody's I wouldn't be ruling him out. I just wonder if the two things maybe holding things up are, one, does Leftwich, is he looking for a two-year contract? That wouldn't surprise me. It doesn't seem to me that that would be something the Steelers would really take a strong stand against. I think they've been happy with him. But as you said, maybe the draft makes things slightly different. So maybe they didn't want to commit to that before the draft. The other thing is, you know, I got to think at the end of the day, he's going to be ahead of Charlie Batch on the depth chart. I don't think that means a lot more money, maybe $500,000 more. But so maybe we're talking about a contract that he's looking for, not necessarily the Steelers are going to give, of $3 million to $3.5 million for 2 years rather than the kind of million-dollar contract that, Charlie Batch is going to get. So, again, with the Steelers cap space issues, maybe this is more a timing thing than anything. Second topic, as always, this has been the lead topic for the last 6 weeks. Mike Wallace Watch, thank God we are down to the last 3 days. When we get on the air on Friday, we won't have the definitive answer, but we're going to have, if somebody pulls a punch, you know, at the 12 o'clock hour on Friday, all hell's going to break loose around the NFL. That will certainly cause a shitstorm, so to speak. But as we've said, it's not going to happen. Mike Wallace is going to be with the Steelers, and we'll know that Friday at midnight. I think that's the cutoff date, but maybe they have it at business hour, so maybe it's earlier. But coming out of that, we know that now all the other Steelers have signed their restricted free agent contracts.
That is correct. We were waiting on Keenan Lewis and Ryan Mundy to sign their restricted tenders. They're all inked up. All the exclusive rights guys are inked up in Isaac Redman, Jeremy Kapanos, and there's one more I'm drawing a blank on.
Ligursky, Foster, I didn't hear.
Ligursky, they've signed. Foster signed. David Johnson signed. And I'm drawing a blank on the other exclusive rights free agent right now. I'll look that up while we're talking. But all of those guys are inked up. Mike Wallace is the only restricted guy not to sign his tender. And, you know, he's probably likely not going to until he gets closer to that June cutoff date when the Steelers can reduce his tender. Steve McClendon is the other exclusive rights free agent that is signed, by the way. You know, we talked about it in the last show, the repercussions of Wallace if he does not sign that tender by that deadline, and how the Steelers can reduce that tender amount and all like that. So I think it's going to happen. I just don't think it's going to happen right away.
Yep. I'm with you with that. So off-season conditioning started yesterday. We didn't hear a lot about it. The only thing I really saw is that there was a large number of players at the practice facility. Did you hear anything more than that?
Anything more than Baron Batch is changing his number to number 20. I think that's the big news to come all out of all that yesterday. The thing about these off-season, and this is what they call phase one, pretty much weight and conditioning type stuff. The thing, really, no news is good news right now at this point, because you don't want to hear about a ruptured Achilles or blown out biceps or triceps or anything like that. So, that started yesterday, and phase one, as they like to call it. And, of course, it's non-mandatory, but, you know, it behooves these young kids to get in there, because they get a per diem and all like that on top of it as well. So, not much to report from the south side. Other than, I guess today, David, we'll get we will definitively get the 2012 schedule. I don't know why they're making a three-hour show out of it on ESPN tonight, but we will know the Steelers' schedule tonight. And also Steelers Live at 4 today, they will be showing the throwback jerseys for this year. There's a lot of speculation it could be the Batman-type, cowl-type jersey from the mid-60s, or, you know, the rugby-type uniform from 1933. So we'll have that info around 4 Eastern today.
I have to tell you, Dave, I'm one of those guys, I love all the throwbacks. I mean, people talk about some of the Jets throwbacks or those Packers throwbacks when they were the Acme Packers, and say, look how ugly they are and anything like that. I'll tell you, I love the diversity look. Do I want to see them every week? Probably not. But I love the fact that seemingly every week a couple teams are wearing them. I think it's great stuff. Certainly the vintage ones like the Chargers powder blue and some of the others are fantastic. But I enjoy it. I've liked the Steelers throwbacks. I'm looking forward to seeing that. So with the schedule, 3 hours. I hope at 7:01 every team's schedule is out so that people can see them and decide if they want to watch that stuff. It'll be something to peruse for me. I always like to go to a couple road games, and maybe you'll be working on the road this year, so I'll certainly be taking a look at that. But maybe more interestingly was just something that was pointed out. We've talked about it earlier in the year, the difference between the Ravens and the Steelers schedule this year, aside from the fact that they're going to have slightly different home and away schedules against some common opponents, is the Ravens get the Houston Texans and the New England Patriots, and at the same time, the Steelers are going to get the Tennessee Titans and the New York Jets. So, look, the outlooks for teams change over the course of the year and during the season. Injuries, et cetera, play a part in that. Predicting these things beforehand is somewhat difficult. But it would seem to be at this date and time when the schedules are released on April 17th that the Steelers have a small advantage over the Ravens based on last year's performance with the schedule that they're going to have this coming year.
And that's the way the schedule's designed to do the rotating schedule is, you know, if you win the division, you play you play that odd
2 and 3, right? You get 2 and 3s versus 1 and 4s.
The odd division out, you know, of common opponents. You know, you get their number one, and like the Steelers finish second in division, they get the number two in both those other two divisions there. So
yeah, right.
That's right. It's not unexpected. I don't know how much to. Let's face it. I mean, the Jets are going to be competitive this year. I think the Titans are going to be a little bit more competitive this year as well. Of course, the Ravens get into Patriots and the Houston Texans. Both those teams are playoff worthy as well. So, you know, it just comes down to this. Just win your games in the division and try to go, you know, 12-4 if you want to win the Steelers division there. So I don't know how much to play into this strength of schedule thing. I've never been a huge fan. As you said, so many things can happen, you know, over a course of the season with injuries and all like that. It's so hard to take a look at it this far out right now, too, when the draft has not even taken place. So we'll get a better feel for that and of course, on into training camp, as we go as well, too.
Yeah, so we'll get all that tonight, and we'll certainly be talking about that on Friday. It is interesting, you know, when we think about the primetime games, I think the Steelers have felt like maybe in years past, which was rectified a little bit last year, that they had too many night games and maybe too many night games late in the season. And so a little bit fewer last year. They've got a lot of marquee opponents playing the NFC East, which we talked about. All four of those games are potential primetime games. Playing Denver, looks like that might be the season opener at night in Denver. That would obviously be a primetime game. Of course, the Ravens games and a few others on the schedule, both New York teams. So plenty of games for the various networks to put the Steelers in primetime, and I'm sure they'll be there 5 or 6 times between 4 o'clock games and the Sunday and Monday night games and the occasional Thursday game. So it'll be fun to see, and we will all plan our schedules accordingly. Dave, a couple little entertaining notes. Wesley Saunders tweeted today that he's grown an inch. I didn't know Adderall did that for you. He said he's up an inch since the combine.
Yeah, I kind of found that a unique tweet as well. So I don't know, you know, 4 extra weeks that he'll be sitting out the start of the 2012 season. I don't know, what's that, like another eighth of an inch possibly?
Yeah, right.
I don't know. I mean, the young kids these days, I don't know, with the things that they eat and all like that, it doesn't surprise me. Maybe he has probably grown another inch. I don't know if this is just kind of a defense of his being. There's a lot of talk that the Steelers very well could possibly be drafting a tight end. It was just a unique tweet, but yeah, I'm glad you pointed that out. And kind of playing off of that, David, I posted yesterday, the Steelers sure have had a lot of outside linebacker-type prospects and tight end prospects in as pre-draft visitors thus far. So, you know, two positions that if you would have polled a good portion of Steeler Nation following the 2011 season, not many of them would have said, oh, well, we're probably going to draft an outside linebacker or a tight end somewhere in the draft or put it as high up on the list of needs. Of course, I've been banging the Kobe Fleener bandwagon, not so much as banging it at me personally, just as when the thing kind of shakes out with the first round and all, and when you look at what's on the roster right now, I could very well see it being addressed. But judging by the names that they have had in and the rounds that these guys are kind of corresponding to go, And I'm talking about Michael Agnew, David Paulson, and Ladarius Green, who Ladarius Green was in just the other day. I definitely see it as a possibility, and we'll have to see if Kobe Fleener is one of the last few pre-draft visitors to come in over the next few days here. But I think it's a very good possibility. We could see the Steelers draft a tight end within the first four or five rounds, and outside linebacker, as I laid out in my post. You know, when you look at the Jason Worlds and you look at the Chris Carter and you look at the James Harrison situation with him turning 34 in May, it's not out of the question that someone like Nick Perry, who they've had in for a pre-draft visit already, could be, you know, high up on their board later on this month.
Yes, absolutely, Damon. Interesting stuff coming out this week. A couple things that I just saw, you know, in the various things I was reading and seeing on Twitter is – two positions that I think the general consensus is they're very deep in the draft are wide receiver and defensive tackle. And for the wide receiver point, there were 23 wide receivers invited to the combine last year. This year they invited 47. So you take that for what it's worth. It looks like it's a very deep position. Obviously, Dave and I now think the Steelers will probably go there. Certainly don't expect it to be in the first two rounds, but anywhere from there on, the Steelers could take a wide receiver or two in the draft, and we'll be watching for that. The other is not that necessarily the Jacksonville front office gets the highest marks for how they've done, particularly in the draft, but their sense, and this has been concurred or stated by others as well, is that the defensive tackle position is one of the deepest in the draft. What are your thoughts on do you generally concur with that idea in terms of overall depth? I mean, we know that safety and tight end are two areas where it's not quite as deep, but would you suggest those are the two of the areas where it's deepest?
I think a defensive tackle is. Now, if you want to translate that over into 3-4 and nose tackle,
yep.
I don't know. You know, when you look at these bottom end guys, Hebron Fangupo, the BYU kid. I think the Steelers even had in the John Hughes kid out of from Cincinnati, another late round prospect. I like nose tackle depth this year. I think it's good, better than it's been in the last few years. I think defensive tackle is a fairly top heavy class as well too. I think you're going to see a lot of defensive tackles in the first three rounds. You know, and it all depends on the defenses that these guys shift into, predominantly probably 4-3 guys, more 3 technique type players. So, yeah, I would say it's a deep position. And the other position, wide receiver, I think that's deep, fairly deep too for the most part.
Yeah, so we agree basically there, and we'll get into some of those guys. Certainly a little bit on Friday and Tuesday. We'll try and look at some guys who the Steelers might be looking at later in the draft. It's a heck of a lot more fun to talk about guys you know are going to make the team and the more impactful guys who the Steelers have taken the first three rounds. But maybe we'll get into a little bit of that next Friday and next Tuesday. And just in terms of draft notes, Dave and I will be on Tuesday, and then we'll try and do a draft recap show that will be up Friday morning. We'll do something that'll be up Saturday, hopefully Saturday morning, and then we will have something up Sunday or Monday at the latest, recapping everything we've done. And for those of you in the Pittsburgh area who like to listen to this stuff online, I will be at Steeler Draft Headquarters reporting on the Steeler Radio Network, which includes the 102.5 and 970 ESPN. So I'll be there. I'll be doing part of the draft coverage on all three of those days. I should be on the air when the Steelers make their pick on Thursday, probably around 10 o'clock, 10:30. I should be on the air when they make their pick on Friday, and so one of their picks on Friday, and then I'll be on the air most of the day Saturday. So if you get a chance, please join us there. I don't know if we'll be taking phone calls, but we'll certainly be talking all about the draft. Dave, a couple other notes on guys around the league, former Steelers. Lima Swede, who we had on last summer and had high hopes for, not high expectations for, but high hopes for, that quickly did not work out with the Steelers, got to work out with the Bengals. And Ryan McBean, the defensive tackle out of Utah, I think if I remember correctly, fourth-round pick in 2007, got released by Denver yesterday, a guy who hooked on with Denver after really seeing no time with Pittsburgh. But, you know, a couple of productive years there. He got released yesterday as well.
Yeah, McBean, I think six games he was facing for some sort of I forget the details of what he was facing there.
They've got a couple of guys in this situation, right, with these suspensions looming?
Yeah, and I think McBean was out of Oklahoma State there. Okay. And let's see, who was the other guy? I'm trying to look this up. DJ Williams, I think, was the other guy for the Broncos.
Yes.
That was facing some time off. Supposedly, these guys are going to, I think, have some lawsuits going after this as well, too. But McBean, this is a guy, I mean, he contributed for them down the stretch last year, and I think they rescinded the restricted tender that they had offered him as well. Just goes to show sometimes you're better off running off and signing those tenders real quick because the Broncos rescinded their tender to him. Of course, he wouldn't have gotten paid, you know, for the first 6 weeks of the season had that suspension, you know, stuck with him and all. But yeah, people are saying, well, you know, should we look at him coming back maybe to the Steelers? Well, not with this six game suspension hanging over his head. I just don't see this as a possibility. They moved on from Ryan McBean quite a few seasons ago.
Yeah, and you got to think just in terms of Lima Swede's career, if he doesn't catch on with somebody this year, he will go down as one of the, you know, I don't want to say more spectacular, but certainly one of the bigger draft busts of the Kevin Colbert and, you know, Mike Tomlin era.
Yeah, this is a guy I just think it's a lot of this has to do with his head, David. I think he's got a mental block in there somewhere, and I don't think he's been able to overcome it. I would be surprised if he catches on with a team, period. Maybe. I don't know. I shouldn't say that. I guess it would not surprise me if he got hired, you know, got a contract to at least go to training camp. But anything much more than that, man, I just don't see it. It would take one hell of a training camp for him to crack a 53-man roster. But, I mean, hey, we'll root for him, but I just don't see it happening.
Yeah, the guy who I'll compare him to in this year's draft, who I like a lot, and I like Lima Swede, is Mohamed Sanu from Rutgers, a big not explosively fast receiver, but big guy who has very good hands in contrast to what we saw from Swede in his professional career. And he's a guy who probably is going to go somewhere in the second round. So I'll be interested to see how his career plays out.
You know, David, it's funny when you go with the what ifs and all. You know, what if Lima Swede had worked out for a couple of seasons? You know, would we? You know, how would that have, you know?
Yeah, Mike Wallace.
Yeah, your Antonio Browns and your Emmanuel Sanders. You know, it's impossible to go back and kind of put this, you know, with the hypotheticals and all like that. But, hey, you know, teams have to move on, and that's what the Steelers did. They kept them around just long enough where, you know, they weren't having to eat too much of that signing bonus. Of course, several of those years of his were spent on the injured reserve, but you got to move on, and that's what the Steelers did. And today we have Mike Wallace, we have Antonio Brown and Emmanuel Sanders, and Lima Swede is just a distant memory.
Yeah, exactly. Dave, one last thing before we break and go to our interview with Dave Tate Thomas. Some interesting talk about the kickoff rules. I guess John Mara of the Giants suggested that, you know, conversations have started about taking the kickoff out of the game. I know as a football fan, both of us would generally be opposed to that, and I kind of dismissed it out of hand as something that would be bad. I couldn't figure out kind of any scenario that would make this remotely interesting. Well, I'll tell you one. I finally heard one yesterday, and I don't know if you've seen this, but for lack of a better term, I'll call it the Schiano proposal, and it's Greg Schiano, the new coach at Tampa who came from Rutgers, had the idea that after a touchdown or a field goal, a team would get the ball. The team that scored would have the ball at their own 30-yard line. And rather than having a kickoff situation, they would be given a 4th-and-15 situation so that there is still the potential for them to keep the ball like an onside kick. And in this case, maybe it's actually a greater percentage of keeping the ball in a 4th-and-15 situation, or they would essentially punt the ball from the 30-yard line. And you know, it keeps some aspect of the return game, because I think the kickoff return is a really exciting play, and I find it somewhat sad if that were to be taken out of the game. But I thought this proposal, the more I thought about it, was really intriguing. Any initial reaction to it?
I haven't read up a lot on it, David, really. I haven't, not the Shiano proposal side of it, so that's something I'll put on my list to do today. I'm a traditionalist, David. I really am. I mean, what are they going to take away next? I mean, the kickoff is part of the game. I actually enjoy the onside kick.
Yeah, sure. I think we all do. And I'm with you 100%.
You know, and I like the surprise onside kick. I mean, I just think you're taking away some of the core things of the game. And what I just said, I mean, what's next? What are they going to take away next? Our fear of all these concussions and lawsuits and all like that.
Well, yeah, so it's just something to pay attention to. This isn't going to happen this year. This isn't going to happen next year, I assume. But they're talking about it, so it's something that for our listeners to put on their radio. Dave, I know you're going to be on today with Greg Linelli on Steelers Radio. You want to just tell us where our listeners can find that around?
Steeler Nation Radio. I'll post a link up on Twitter. I think it's going to air at 3 Eastern time. I'm supposed to go on the air with him at 12 Eastern today. So that'll be up, and I'll post a link to that on Twitter where you can listen to that. But if you want to just Google Steeler Nation Radio, there's a bunch of free players on the iHeart Radio Network if you have a smartphone or iPad or all like that as well, too. So it'll be my first time on that show, and look forward to it as well.
Okay, well, good stuff. And let's take a quick break, and we'll be back with Dave Tay Thomas. Welcome back to the Terrible Podcast. We're pleased to have as our guest Dave Tay Thomas. Dave was with us last year when we got into the draft. He's with us again this year. He does his work for NFL Draft Scout and the NFL Scouting, the league office. Dave Tay, it's always great to have you. Dave and I are pleased to talk to you.
Hey, let me tell you one thing, especially when it comes to Steeler people, you guys are my favorite in the world. I think you guys got the best fans in the world, and you got 3 of my sleepers on that team right now, and Ike Taylor, Cortez Allen, and Jason Worlds, 3 guys that worked out at my facility before they ended in the draft.
Dave, why don't you lead us off?
Dave, I tell you, I've been watching a lot of film, and I can't wait to bend your ear on several of these guys. And one guy I want to start with, he's kind of off the radar here a little bit as far as Steeler Nation goes, Kobe Fleener out of the University of Stanford. Tell me, is Kobe a first-round graded talent? And B, what is the outside chances he's the selection by the Steelers at 124?
If he's at 24, that's because of any of the offensive or defensive linemen and not on the board. I like Kobe, but don't get me wrong. You got a guy over there in 51 games, only started 16 times. To me, he's more of a Jay Novacek type of tight end. I know that the way that the position has been transferring over within recent years, you stop seeing those quality blockers at the position, and you end up with more of a pass catcher. But when I look at your roster over here, you know, you got to protect Big Ben, because if Big Ben goes down, what are you going to have in that backfield? Charlie Batch? The guy coughs up dust.
Well, kind of playing off of that, it's kind of obvious that you're saying Fleener, unless all of the like the tackles and the defensive guys are off the board. Mike Adams is a guy I'm trying to give a second chance to. I'm not overly impressed. I'm worried about that 5-cent head of his. Talk about the tackles that'll be available to the Steelers at 124, and which way would you go?
Honestly, if this kid from LSU is sitting on the board named Michael Brockers, I take him in a nanosecond. To me, he's the second coming to Pat Williams, and you got to look at one thing. Casey Hampton's birth certificate. I need myself a plugger for the future. Brockers is an Albert Hainsworth without the attitude problem. I think he may end up sliding on the draft because he didn't have a good combine, and when teams go back, they get stuck on statistics. Not for anything. Look at Casey's stats over the year. I need somebody in the middle of my field to plug that line. Now, later on in the draft, in the second, third round, there is one guy that got such a snub from the combine people, and I am telling everybody, before David DeCastro, before Kevin Zeitler even end up making it to Hawaii as a passenger on an airplane, Brandon Brooks from Miami, Ohio, will be there as a starter in the Pro Bowl. This kid is a monster. When you got a 360-pound offensive guard who also has experience at left tackle, I got to bring in a meat like that. Another guy I got to look at on the line, if he's still there when Brockers is gone, is the Georgia kid, Cordy Glenn. Why? Because I like big physical blockers, but I also like guys that got versatility. If I need to move him inside and let him learn there and then move him outside later on, I got myself two quality guys, and I think you could find both of those guys in rounds 1, 2, or 3.
I definitely agree with you on Brooks. I have the Steelers draft him in the second round of my mock draft. I'm not sold on Cordy Glenn. I worry about him being top heavy. I worry about that weight going forward with him. And to me, he's just so much of a tweener that, is that just the plus in him that he is a tweener?
Look at the short yardage game that Pittsburgh uses. I take Glenn, I move him into offensive guard. I'm not going to play him out at left tackle. I mean, the kick could be a revolving door out there, but inside, I need somebody that's going to get a push off that line. I need somebody that's going to blow those defensive tackles 5-10 yards back. That's what he's going to do. He's got incredible hand speed. And when I got a big man like that that could anchor in the middle of the field, I mean, you need bus fare to get around those two guys.
What about if Brockers doesn't drop? And let's go ahead, David.
Yeah, I was just going to follow along those lines. Dave and I have had a lot of talks with our listeners about some of these guys. People got very enamored early of Dontari Poe because of how he did on the workout. We've looked at the film, obviously not productive against inferior level competition. When you see a guy like that who's so impressive at the combine but hasn't produced on tape, how do you look at him and how do you grade a guy like that?
I've been in this industry 45 years. The last time I was at the combine was 2001. I'm not going to get a jolly of some guy sitting around in his underwear running for me unless I lived out in San Francisco with the rest of the people. But you know, what I got to look at is one thing. I need production. I need guys that are going to go out there and not only produce on the football field, and I'm not talking about 100 tackles. When I'm looking at a defensive tackle, guys, I need a guy that's going to occupy multiple blockers for me. Why? Because they make those defensive ends end up going to Hawaii.
Well, let's talk about another name that's been linked often to the Steelers in round one, of course, Dont'a Hightower. I worry about him, as far as the hip turning. There's no doubt to me he can plug the hole as a buck linebacker on downs 1 and 2, but what about as far as his lateral movement, his ability to drop into coverage into 3-4 defense? Should Steeler Nation be so high on Dont'a Hightower as the pick at 124?
Go back and look at the struggles that they've been going on with the linebackers that came out of the Alabama Tide program. This is a kid that could probably play middle linebacker in a 4-3, but in a 3-4, I just don't think he's going to have the pass coverage assignments out there. Besides, when I look at this roster right now, what in the world is going on with not moving Jason Worlds inside? You're talking about an intelligent kid that could shoot the gaps and everything else and will allow me to go ahead and use that first-round draft pick where I need to use that on either one of my lines.
Well, that's an interesting thought. I mean, obviously the Steelers have Chris Carter and Worlds as guys on the outside that haven't gotten
a lot of let's not forget about Sylvester, too. That's a vastly underrated third-year man.
Well, he's a guy who, you know, that's the big question mark is, you know, when they come into camp this year, can he do enough to win that inside job from Larry Foote and play alongside Lawrence Timmons? I mean, that's kind of on the Steeler defense, aside from Casey Hampton coming back from injury, I have to think that that is kind of the focal point of what they're going to do. And because people look at Foote and his age and the uncertainty about Sylvester, I think that's why they feel, a lot of people feel like an inside linebacker who can attack the line of scrimmage may be a point of need, which is obviously how they get to Hightower.
I've been down to Florida. I've seen Worlds working out. I've seen Cortez Allen working out. I think they're going to be the answers at inside linebacker and cornerback, respectively. Both of them have been playing like their tails underneath Ike Taylor down at Florida. Well, and, you know, Ike is now the elder statesman on that defense over there, and I think that you got the talent to fill those two spots right on your roster at the moment.
Yeah, we're in love with Curtis Brown and Cortez Allen and think those guys are going to be the guys. So corner doesn't look like an immediate need. But let me ask you again as we look at some of the guys who are projected maybe to go off the board in the 10 to 17 range. If a guy like DeCastro, if a guy like Mark Barron, if a guy like Courtney Upshaw were to fall, a guy like Luke Kuechly were to fall, is there a name there that jumps out at you as a guy other than the Brockers who you mentioned early on, who you think that is a good fit for the Steelers and is a guy who, you know, is a Hawaii type of guy, as you've used the term?
Honestly, if that's what my choices are left on the board, I'd much rather go ahead and trade down. You see, Kuechly to me is strictly a 4-3 middle linebacker. You got to look at some of the talent that's out there. After the top 4 or 5 guys, man, you're staring at about 50 second round type of draft picks.
That's a good point. And the thing is, who would somebody be enamored with at the bottom end of the first round willing to move up to the Steelers spot in 24?
You're going to have teams like Minnesota sitting there with an early second-round pick that's worried about New England jumping in and taking Harrison Smith away from them. Or you got a team that may turn around and think that Shane McClellan from Boise State may be going off the board early in round two and want to jump up. I think that probably right now more people are talking to the Rams about the first pick in round two than anybody is talking about a first-round draft pick. And if you look at what's going on in 1 to 10 in the first round, most of the teams over there are playing Henny Youngman. Take my pick, please.
I'm going to pin you down on Mike Adams, though. I want your true assessment of Mike Adams.
And give us Jonathan Martin as well. Let's take a look at those two guys and compare and contrast them.
Okay, Martin to me is a finesse type. I'd much rather have him over a right tackle. I don't think he's going to be physical enough to play the left tackle spot for me. Mike Adams, if I spotted him the A-N-E-S, he still couldn't spell his last name right. This is a kid that not only has injury problems, not only has off-field problems, also has practice habit problems. Why the heck do I want a guy like that sitting out there and all I'm going to hear from him is oops or seeing a flag on the floor? 11 penalties this year, guys. I mean, 7 of them were false starts. All right, his complaint was, I didn't have enough practice time. Well, that's your own fault, man. It wasn't me that had you suspended.
I definitely agree that Adams and Martin, I don't think are first round guys. I differ with
you. Want to steal on the offensive line? You want to steal at offensive tackle? In the 5th through 7th round, go back down and go look at the kid from Florida State, Zebry Sanders. He is a kid that played right tackle his whole career. Dacko goes down, her kid slides right over. He had a monster second half. He had 100 knockdown blocks and 16 touchdown resulting blocks for FSU in the second half of the season. People are going to say he's slow of foot. I'm going to say, hey, man, you live with Max Stocks now, didn't you?
Josh Chapman is another guy. The guy has not been able to work out because of the surgery of the knee and all like that. A classic 3-4 nose plugger out of Alabama. Where does his value at? Where does he fall, first of all? What round? And if the Steelers wait and don't, let's say they don't get a Brockers in round one, I have a feeling he won't drop. But where is Josh Chapman's value at?
If Josh didn't have that injury, Josh would probably be talked about at late one, early two. Right now I see him solid in the 3rd round. You know, he's not been able to work out, but he is coming. You know, he will be ready by the time the season starts. One kid that I tell everybody to watch out for, due to his versatility, reminds me of Kiesel, reminds me of Smith. Go check out the Cincinnati kid, Derek Wolfe. He's a kid that when you go inside and need an under tackle, if you line up in a 4-3, he could slide in there. But that kid's got a motor and a half on him to play out on the defensive end spot, too, in a 3-4 alignment.
The Steelers have had interest in Wolf and brought him in for a pre-draft visit. I'm afraid his stock is rising so fast that he had to be taken in the first 2 rounds there. The Steelers have had a lot of outside linebackers in, though. Maybe this plays into your scenario that possibly they do have Of course, this is the kind of first outside of speculation hearing that Worlds could move inside. But when you look at a guy like Nick Perry, who they've had in, talk about some of the 3-4 outside linebacker tweener types. Is Perry worthy of a first-round pick?
Yes, I think he is. I think he's a quality type, especially for a 3-4 defense. However, let me run a name by you right now, and people, you can put a straitjacket on me now, but come back in a couple of years with the second coming of Derrick Brooks. You got to look at the age that you got over there with your madman that keeps on getting penalties and fined by the NFL office at outside linebacker.
Harrison.
If you get tired of Harrison, what do? Round two, find the steal of the draft, a guy who's my second best defensive player overall, Lavonte David from Nebraska.
That's interesting because he was went in a mock today that I think it was Chad, excuse me, the Dave, help me out.
Chad Reuter.
No, the guy on actually ESPN, Todd McShay, had him going about 47. It's just a question of his size, right? He's got a motor that won't quit, can go sideline to sideline, and the only reason he falls a little is because of his size.
That's definite, though. You've got to look at a guy that, one, he could be the second coming of Derrick Brooks. Or, if you want to make him a safety with that speed he's got, you got the second coming of Darren Woodson. There is no better tackling machine in this draft than Lavonte David. Sorry to the Coochley family up at BC, but this guy hits. Coochley chases.
Is he at all like Patrick Willis, or he's quicker than Patrick Willis?
Oh my God! If I had my choice of either one of them, honestly, if I had Lavonte David and I had a top 15 pick in the draft, if Gilmore wasn't there from South Carolina, I'd take him in a nanosecond.
Interesting. A lot of people are trying to link Mike Martin, who met with the Steelers at the Combine, of course, defensive tackle out of Michigan. When you look at him on tape, I kind of view him as a one-technique guy only. He has shown he can anchor over the nose. Is he a true 3-4 nose tackle at the next level? Is he a guy of Josh Chapman? If the Steelers have not gone nose tackle by round three, and let's say Josh Chapman's off the board, does Mike Martin, is he worthy of a pick there in the 3-4 nose?
You know, I look at the guy and I look at his short arms over there, man. He reminds me of Mr. Potato Head. I just don't know if I'm going to go on him in the mid-rounds. Meanwhile, later in the draft, round five, round six, I look at that kid from Regina, Rakeem Hicks. I mean, he's a guy. This kid's got a motor and a half on him, and he's a raw talent. What better way to learn but to sit back and have a mentor like Casey Hampton?
What about, speaking about nose tackles, Hebron Fangupo out of BYU, your thoughts
like
on him?
Like him, and I also like that kid, DeJuan Harris out of USC. I think both of these kids could play over the nose.
And you mentioned, we briefly mentioned Nick Perry, but didn't get your thoughts on where he fits and where you think he projects.
You know, Perry to me reminds me of a poor man's Upshur. I think that this is the type of guy that I'd much rather have him stand up than play on the line. Now, if I'm playing him on the line in a 4-3 and using him on the edge, yeah, but I'm only going to get two downs out of him. I think with his foot speed, with his lateral agility, I play him at OLB.
I want to circle back to your comments on Jason Worlds. I'm kind of intrigued. You evidently know a lot about Jason. I mean, this is a guy that's basically a converted, 4-3 defensive end and has not flashed outside due to injuries mostly and due to lack of playing time. Are you saying for certain that you think the Steelers are considering shifting him inside to the buck role?
We have the same agent.
Interesting.
We being who?
Jason Worlds and myself.
Yeah.
Look at Jason Worlds. The reason why I fell in love with this kid is his work ethic. I looked at this kid where he came out with that bad shoulder in the draft. Meanwhile, this kid, I swear to God, man, it was like I show up at the training facility, he's already there. I leave and he's already still there. And I'm a type of guy, I do 25-8 instead of 24-7.
Interesting. I just, a lot of people have tossed it around about him kicking inside, but there's nothing of evidence to show us,
You got to realize, too, guys, you go back and look at his high school days, he was actually recruited as a middle linebacker.
Interesting, interesting.
That doesn't surprise me. But here's another guy, the kid from Michael Kendricks, is that his The kid
I like Kendricks, but I'll tell you one thing. I'd much rather take that Utah State kid. If he's there in round two and David's gone, man, oh, my God, Bobby Taylor. Whew.
You think he has what it takes to play the buck?
Bobby Taylor, to me, is like Bob Scott was before Scott got hurt. I think that if you take this guy, play him inside, man, you're going to have a quality man in your 3-4 alignment. And if he's inside to go to a 4-3, you put him out on a weak side. Even though he's 6 foot tall on 240 pounds, that kid's got a motor on him.
And that's Bobby Wagner there you're talking about. Let's shift over to a few running backs here. The Steelers have shown some interest in Isaiah Pede. Of course, at the Senior Bowl, really started climbing up the charts there. They've had him in for a pre-draft visit. To me, comes off as a third down back only, not big enough to run inside the tackles. Talk a little bit about him and where his draft stock is.
Have you ever sat down and talked with that kid, man? Tuscan Bill on Fruit Loops box probably makes more common sense than this guy does, man. I mean, he scares the hell out of me. Let me tell you, running back right now, whoever gets this guy, he's got the second coming to Jerome Bettis, Robert Turbin. Kid's had injury problems that made him sit out the 2010 season. You go back and look at those numbers from 2009, 2011. Later on, I'll send you across the comparison chart on this guy. I think that outside of Richardson, he may be the best value pick that you could find at the running back spot and still find him on the board in round four.
And round four is about where I have his stock at right now.
He's out of Utah State. Hey, Dave Tate, let's a couple guys, obviously not necessarily Steeler needs, but a couple guys who are big question marks in the draft. Obviously, the quarterback position is a fun one for everybody to talk about. What are your thoughts on Tannehill and Brandon Whedon?
I'm not convinced that Tannehill is anything more than David Carr. Brandon Whedon, I mean, this is a guy, he's going to come into your organization. He's going to be older than your coaches. Let me run a name by you, fifth, sixth, seventh round. Two names by you, by the way. Especially with David Dixon out there trying to search for the Holy Grail, which is called the second string job, which he's never going to find.
Right.
You look at a kid from Tennessee Chattanooga, B.J. Coleman. If he didn't have that shoulder injury this year, this kid probably would have been a second or third round draft. And one kid that I like, especially with his foot speed, just needs a little bit coaching. I think he's a by far better product than David Dixon, the Southern Mississippi kid, Austin Davis.
What about, you talked about running backs, you've talked about production. Few guys were as productive as LaMichael James. He was certainly in a system that used his skills perfectly. He's a good pass-catching back out of the backfield. Is he a guy you would take middle, second round, or is he a guy who you think just because of his size, even though he can run between the tackles, that you wouldn't touch until later?
If Doug Martin and Lamar Miller were on the board, I'm saying LaMichael who?
Yeah.
I'd much rather go for those two guys. I'm not a David Wilson fan. David Wilson, to me, runs sideways more than he runs straight ahead. Meanwhile, with Doug Martin, I got a good meat and potatoes guy. But Lamar Miller, oh, man. You're talking about McGee without the knee issues.
Tight ends, you're evidently not high on Kobe Fleener possibly as a first-round selection. Talk about a few mid-round tight ends. The Steelers have had in Michael Ignew from Missouri for a pre-draft visit. They also had the kid out of Oregon, David Paulson, in for a visit. And one other, the kid out of Louisiana Lafayette, I believe they've had in as well, too.
Oh, Peterson, yeah, you're talking about three guys over here that if I couldn't find a decent tight end on the board, I'd go to another position. Let me tell you about a late-round steal. Kids up at Beloit College of all places. Yeah. Start doing some homework on this kid, Derek Carrier. Talking about Novacek before, this is the second coming to Novacek. When I got a 240-pounder man that runs sub 4.5, that had 145 receptions in the last 2 years and averaged 20 yards a pop, he shows up at Wisconsin's Pro Day and just simply blew the minds out of all of the scouts up there. This kid's going to play, and he's going to play big.
Any thoughts on Ignew?
You know, Agnew, to me, man, I'm talking about a tight end coming out of a spread offense, man. I mean, what kind of blocking skills am I going to get out of him? To me, when it comes to blocking, the kid's Venus de Milo.
All right, Dave Tay, we won't ask you exactly what you're going to write for the Pittsburgh papers. We know you're going to do some work for them in the coming week or so leading up to the draft. But if you're making the pick for the – let me ask you this two ways. You answer it however you like. You want to tell me who you think the Steelers are going to pick, or you want to tell me who you would pick when the Steelers pick at 24?
Actually, I think it'd be both. I think some teams are just going to sit by and bypass on the guy, and Pittsburgh's going to end up with the best defensive tackle in the draft in Brockers. I see in round two them coming up and taking Brandon Brooks. If they don't take Brandon Brooks in round two, I see them going for that kid Osamel in the third round. If not, that's where Derek Wolfe will fall in their hands. Round four, I got them going for Robert Turbin. If Turbin's gone, they take a combination press coverage cornerback or a safety in Casey Hayward out of Vanderbilt. Round five, I got them going for B.J. Coleman. I just see this kid is a tough, gritty quarterback to learn behind the two veterans. Round six, my steal at the wide receiver position out of Arizona, Jerron Kreiner. This is a kid that's going to move the chains. Come up in round seven, if I don't go for Coleman in round five, I'm looking at Austin Davis. If not, I'm looking at Marcus Folston out of Miami for my defensive end spot, Zebry Sanders at offensive tackle, and a super-duper sleeper at wide receiver, Devon Wiley. If any of those three are gone, I'm bringing in a punter to go out with my punter with the bad legs, and I take Drew Butler from Georgia.
That is awesome.
Interesting. You told us in the email for us to have our seatbelts on, and every year. That's why we like having you on, because you move so fast for us that we have to stay buckled in here on this. And, Dave, as always, it's a pleasure to have you on the Terrible Podcast. And, you know, we're definitely going to be watching this stuff with Jason Worlds, too, in the preseason.
I tell you one thing, they move him to inside linebacker, you're going to have no problems whatsoever. This kid's work ethic is just tremendous. Talk to the kid, man. Listen to what he speaks about. He could put an insomniac to sleep, man, because he is so determined on what he needs to do on the football field.
Well, we appreciate your time. We'll look for your stuff in the local Pittsburgh papers, and we'll come back and circle back with you, you know, sometime in May or June when things have settled down and we all have a chance to digest, and we'll see who got what right.
Well, check your email this weekend, because I'm going to be sending you over my analysis at each position, and check those comparison charts. It will simply blow your minds.
Well, great stuff, Dave Tate. Dave Tate Thomas of NFL Draft Scouts and the NFL Scouting Office. Always appreciate
Hey, I'll tell you
time.
One thing, guys. If you want, for your listeners over here, if you want some information on this draft, if you want to see the reports that go into the NFL hands, have them email me over at scoutingservices@AOL.com. If they mention the podcast, they'll get the information. If they don't mention the podcast, they end up in my spam folder.
All right, great stuff. It's just scoutingservices@NFL.com.
At AOL.com.
All right, Dave Tate. Well, appreciate it. Thanks again. We'll look forward to talking to you soon.
Peace out, guys.
Well, Dave, some great stuff from Dave Tate Thomas, huh?
He always moves fast, old Dave Tate, and we give him one name, and he gives us four back. So
he's got his guys. He's got his guys. But, you know, some interesting stuff there on Jason Worlds, and I don't know if he loses credibility or gains credibility by saying we have the same agent, but, you know, we'll certainly be keeping an eye on that and try to do some digging around.
Yeah, and also with the Brockers, I'm not totally convinced Brockers falls there to the Steelers, but if so, and the Steelers take him, you heard it from Dave first. And listeners, hey, you know, Dave does write up excellent reports. David and I both have our hands on these things already. Take advantage of his offer and email him, davescoutingservices@AOL.com, I believe. Make sure to mention that you heard it on the Terrible Podcast there, and he'll fire those things right out to you and all. So take advantage of that. It's good reading.
Yeah, great stuff. So, and always give us your feedback. We'll take all sorts of Twitter feeds and questions on Gmail. Let us know what you want to hear about as we get into kind of the last throws here. Tuesday will be our last show before the draft. So we'll answer any questions we can, and we'll both give you our picks. Dave's, you know, been giving you his mock drafts as we go through here, and we'll give you our picks certainly for the first three rounds, how we expect things to go. And as I said, we'll try to have a show up Friday morning recapping Thursday's draft, Saturday morning recapping Saturday's part of the draft, and then we'll have something up no later than Monday recapping the rest of the draft, stepping back and taking a look at the whole thing. So, as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.